Good evening, friends. Welcome to the investor and analysts conference call post Kotak Mahindra Bank's results for the year ended 31st March. We are truly in uncharted times, and also, as it said, 24 hours is a long time. And I would first like to say that we have been significantly enthused in the last 24 hours, first with the Prime Minister Modi's announcement of a very significant stimulus package and reimagining of India, which he did last night at 8 p.m., and which was followed by a conference, television conference by the Finance Minister, which has just, which was just a few minutes ago. And I would like to actually comment on some of the points which were made by the Finance Minister, which have significantly positive implications for the financial sector. And she made a list of more than 15, 16 points, but some of them which stand out and have significant benefits for the financial sector. Number one is a 300,000 crore or 3 lakh crores line for central government guarantee for MSMEs for new financing. It's a very significant relief and will be a big boost for MSMEs to start and banks to be able to lend an incremental 300,000 crores fully guaranteed by the Government of India. And this will actually also help in protecting the existing book. Second is redefinition of micro, small and medium enterprises with higher investment and turnover limits, which significantly enables the MSMEs to grow and for the banking industry to be able to redefine MSMEs, including the eligibility for priority sector advances. The third important aspect is relief for non-bank financial companies in terms of two packages. One is a 30,000 crore package, which is effectively guaranteed by the government, and another is a 45,000 crore package with a first loss. Of course, we wait for the greater details, but I do believe these are very, very significant game-changing moves. In addition to that, the reliefs to real estate for the force measure under RERA, as also postponement by 6 months for the period, a construction period, and easing on tax payments and tax returns are all benefits which will make a significant difference to liquidity and ease the pressure in the COVID era for consumers and businesses. And I would like to say that this is a very meaningful package and consistent with the fact that the Prime Minister Modi thought it important yesterday to make the economy as the main focus for the next steps in COVID era. That brings me, friends, to the whole COVID situation. And here are three or four points which stand out in terms of the COVID situation and its implications for us as we run our bank and our business. First, it looks like COVID is here to stay longer than what most people would have liked to see it in end March or early April. It is not going away in a hurry. We do not see a sustainable cure as of now, nor do we see the potential of a vaccine for the next 12 to 15 months. For COVID will be with us, it will linger on, and we will have to continue and deal with it as a part of life, at least for a while. Number two, while lockdowns may be necessary from a health and a science point of view to protect lives against virus, lockdowns have an exponential cost on the economy. And the other issue about the lockdowns is once you are into the lockdowns, getting out of the lockdowns is not easy. It is complicated. And therefore, while India has done successfully controlling the impact of the number of deaths through the virus because of the lockdown, there are economic costs, and it is in a calibrated manner that India is getting out of this lockdown situation and moving towards a gradually normalizing economy. We think we are some way away, and there is an economic cost to it. There is a wide variation in expectation of economic cost. The optimistic side, we have seen IMF at 1.9%, And I saw some research reports yesterday talking about minus 5%. So we have to watch and see. And it also depends on how much support which comes from the government in terms of fiscal stimulus, which can ease the pain of the lockdown, as also the calibrated opening. Therefore, the second point, lockdowns have an economic cost and difficult to get down, get out of, is a reality with which we will continue to deal with as we talk. So in that context, how do we think about the business side? The impact on the real sector, of course, has real costs on the financial sector. And to the extent to which the state supports the real sector, the impact cost on the financial sector reduces. But there is still going to be a cost. So in that context, what are the few first principles we need to follow in the financial sector ourselves? Number one, strong balance sheet. And it's absolutely clear that at this point of time, the balance sheet has a significant weightage in terms of strategy. Number two, a strong and trusted deposit franchise. And in that context, I'm happy to report that both on the balance sheet with a tier one capital of 17-odd% and a deposit franchise where our customer deposits for the year ended March 2020 grew at 20%. CASA ratio of 56.2% and 86% of our deposits are CASA and term deposits below rupees 5 crores. These are all strong positions from the point of view of the balance sheet and the deposit franchise. The next question is, we really divide the world on the balance sheet to pre-COVID, that is what we call as before COVID, which I would in a simple way call it as pre-31st March, and after COVID, which is post-31st March. And in the post-COVID world, we need to be looking at our lending business in a very different manner. Our strategy for lending, therefore, is right now pegged on three important aspects. Number one is the sector. Number two is individual companies with high fixed operating costs. We are a little more cautious in terms of lending too. And number three is businesses or companies with high leverage. And I will add the fourth point now that the state is stepping in. Companies which otherwise we would have found it challenging to lend, but with the support of the state as a guarantor, we would be certainly more willing to consider that and really help in kickstarting the economy while making sure that the safety of our balance sheet is ensured. And we will certainly use this opportunity to grow on a state-guaranteed situation. We are also very clearly focused on customer acquisition through the digital route. We are seeing, even today, in the month of May, we are adding about 14,000 new customer accounts every day through our digital acquisition channel. And we see that actually speeding up as we go further. Therefore, without any physical intervention, if we can get to a level of customer acquisition from 14,000, even higher, that would be a part of our focus. And in that context, we have also taken a decision that we will spend more on technology rather than less. We are also completely flexible in terms of what segments of business we lend to and not married to a fashion or a herd, which is something which we have always stated as our core. And on the customer franchise, we also see a very significant opportunity to grow our franchise in non-credit risk areas of business, which is the advisory businesses, the securities business, the wealth management business, and the asset management business. And we continue to see a robust growth in the brand, the franchise, and the positioning of our firm as a consolidated entity. Also, as we go into the future, we see the financial sector, as it navigates through this turbulence, like we have seen in the telecom sector, has also probably seen sectors like airlines as we go forward. we see the financial sector going through a significant consolidation phase as we go forward. And from our point of view, we at this stage have two ways of looking at this. First is to continue focusing on navigating, driving with care and alertness through the turbulence. At the same time, keeping an eye on the other side of the shore and seeing what opportunities can come to us in the context of this all transformation of the financial sector, which will inevitably take place over the next 12 to 18 months or maybe even earlier. So with that, I just want to say that we, in terms of our focus, continue with a conservative approach, but alert to opportunity and not scared of taking opportunity in this period. And in terms of our internal working, it is just quite amazing how the levels of productivity and efficiency of our firm, especially at the senior level, has dramatically increased. I've got my full senior team here on this call, and we frequently interact, and at times we are now also working on a plan that in the post-COVID world, how will our business look like? What will be the future requirements? What will be the impact on the cost-to-income ratios? How will digital and technology do vis-a-vis the branch networks? And we are at about 1,600 branches. How do we strategize on that into the future? As also, what are the levers we need to press to significantly transform Kotak as an institution in the time ahead, what we popularly call as AC, after COVID? With that, I will now request my colleague Jaimin Bhatt to take you through the presentation, and then we can reopen for discussions and questions and answers. Over to you, Jaimin.
Thank you, Uday. Let me take you through the standalone numbers first. For this full year FY20, the bank closed with a post-tax profit of 5,947 crores, which is 22% higher than the same period last year. We end this quarter with a net interest margin of 4.72%, which is compared to 4.46 we had the same period last year. Our capital adequacy continuing to be very healthy. We have a total capital adequacy of 17.9% and it's tier 1 at 17.3%. Our net interest income this quarter grew 17% on a year-on-year basis. Thanks to the cost of funds coming down, we also had the NIM expansion, as I talked about. The other income, again, grew decently from 1,489 crores for this quarter, which is about 17% higher than the same period last year. At our operating profit level, which we grew to 2,324 crores for this quarter and over 10,000 crores for the year, we had a decent growth when it came to the operating profit level, 2,725 crores, which was significantly higher than what we did last year, about 19% higher. When it comes to provisions, we have taken a provision hit of 1,047 crores in this quarter, which includes a COVID-related provision of 650 crores, which I will take in a minute. They talked about the deposits level. We have continued to see deposits growing well. Our CASA deposit at the end of March is at 56.2%. In addition, our sweep deposits continues to be healthy at 6.6%. Our average deposits on SA grew by 21% average this year versus last year. We have a component of wholesale floating rate savings account deposits, which is part of the average, which is part of the savings accounts. If I take that away, the actual savings account non-wholesale floating rate grew by 34% on a year-on-year basis. We also saw in this period our savings account overall deposits cross the 1 lakh crore mark. And we talked about the lockdown period during this month and whatnot. In the current month of May, we are actually opening a total of about, on an average, 14,000 accounts per day, which pretty much compares well with the 44 lakh accounts which we opened in the whole of last year. our deposits overall grew by 16%, but that's also because we actually defocused on the certificates of deposits, which are the wholesale variety. We grew them down by 55% on a year-on-year basis. Our CASA plus TDs below 5 crores now comprising 86% of our overall deposits. Our savings account cost now coming to 5.23% because of the cuts which we did in the previous quarter. We've had some more reductions of our savings accounts rates, which have happened in April, not factored into this number. On our advances, we ended the period with a total advances of just short of 2,20,000 crores, about a 7% rise on a year-on-year basis. Our corporate book at about 84,800 grew by about 6% on a year-on-year basis. We had decent growth in the tractor finance division, which grew about 18% on a year-on-year basis. Home loans again grew to, and we closed the period at 46,800 crores, a 15% growth on a year-on-year basis. CVCs, we had a negative growth for the year, small number, but we degrew from 19,700 to 19,250. On the consumer bank side, one component is the consumer bank working capital, which is a small business working capital financed by the consumer bank, which is secured, which ended the period with 19,800 crores. On the other hand, the personal loans, business loans, and the consumer durable loans, we ended with 9,750 crores, a sequential negative growth for this quarter. Similarly, credit cards, we ended with 4,700 crores, again, a sequential negative for this quarter. On the asset quality, we closed this period with a GNPA of 2.25%. We increased the coverage ratios, and we moved to 69% coverage as against 64.4 one quarter ago, resulting in a net NPA now at 0.71%. Our slippages this quarter at 491 crores. Of course, this got the benefit of the RBI circular on standstill, which if you had taken that the slippages would have been higher by about another 660 odd crores. Our SMA2 amounting to a low of 96 crore rupees, which is 0.04% of our total advances. What we have done on the COVID provisioning at 650 crores is effectively taken all overdue amounts as of February 29, 2020, when the moratorium period began, and for those accounts which had availed of moratorium, we considered all of that. And at account level, we provided 10%. If I look at up, and we've considered people who have taken moratorium right up to April 30, 2020. If I take that population of people who have opted for moratorium up to April 30, 2020, about 26% of our borrowers at account level have gone in for that moratorium. Now, if you look at the 650 crores of COVID provision which we have taken, plus if we take the standard provision, and some specific provisions and some other provisions which are like unhedged foreign currencies and specific sector provisions, that total actually covers up our entire net non-performing assets. So together with specific provisions today, we have provision numbers which cover our entire gross non-performing assets, and we are therefore starting the financial year with a reasonably clean number. Our specific sector provisions, again, our NBFC numbers remained at 4% of our total exposure. Our commercial real estate at 2.2% and LRD at 1.6%. As you all are aware, we have sought approval from the shareholders to do an equity raise of up to 65 million shares, for which we've sought shareholder approval, and the ballot should be ending end of this month, at 25th of May. At the consolidated level, we ended the full year with a post-tax profit of 8,593 crores, which compared with 7,200 crores last year is about a 19% rise on a year-on-year basis. At the consolidated level, again, capital adequacy is pretty healthy, at 19.8% overall capital adequacy and 19.2% at Tier 1. NIM at 4.73% for the consolidated entity. Apart from the bank, we had contributions coming in from the life insurance entity, the shareholder profit post-tax for the quarter at 165 crores, Kotak Securities at 163 crores, Kotak Prime at 161 crores, Kotak Investments at 77 crores, the mutual fund and the trustee company at 88 crores. A total net worth at the group level now at 67,000 crores, giving us a book value per share of 348 rupees per share. Our advances at the group level had a slow growth as subsidiaries which get into auto loans had a negative growth for the year, and so also the other subsidiary which is more into loans against shares and commercial real estate. So at the non-bank level, we had a negative growth on the advances. Kotak Life, we declared our embedded value last year. At the end of this year, we have an Indian embedded value of 8,388 crores with a VNB margin of 28.8%. Bank assurance continues to be a 44% of our total channel mix, and persistency ratio is continuing to be high on the insurance segment. The life insurance company, again, having a solvency ratio, which is pretty healthy at 2.9 times, seeing a gross written premium growth in the year at 26.6%. On our capital market subsidiaries, we were involved in transactions during the quarter, notably of SBI cards and the DMART issuance, as well as the buyback of Aster DM. Our securities company on the cash market segment clocks a market share of 9.1% in the Indian market. Our assets under management spread across the group at 2,25,000 crores across the groups, including the offshore entities. The domestic mutual fund, we had a profit post-tax of 88 crores between the mutual fund asset management company and the trustee company. Our average assets under management overall was 1,86,000 crores for this quarter. The two NBFCs, as I said, both of them have had a degrowth on their advances number compared to the previous year, but both continuing to be pretty healthy on their capital adequacy. Kotak Prime at 24.3% and investments at 29.4%. In both these NBFCs, again, we have taken COVID provisions on similar principles. In Kotak Prime, 50 crores, and Kotak Investments, 14 crores. I'd hand over to Shanti for giving a flavor of the digital world before we take the questions, please.
Thank you, Jeremy. Digital was a way of life even before COVID, and it is also during the COVID era. Whether it is customer acquisitions, they talked about the fact that we are opening savings accounts on a daily basis. We have extended our 811 account opening platform to all channels, corporate salary, branches, and other channels. Whether it is account customer acquisition, transactions, deposits, we have seen a significant increase in customer throughput and transactions through digital, and mobile remains the preferred way for customers to transact with us. We've done a few interesting things like, Google Assistant integration. We're the first bank to do that, and customers can actually ask for their balances via the Google Assistant. We have, continued to work on our open banking platform, including API integration with corporates and service partners. We added 91 new partners, and we've seen a 16x transaction growth over FY19. Our focus continues to be on building digital journeys across our products and services to enable customers in this less contact or no contact world to comfortably do banking from the comfort of their homes or even offices going forward. Not just the bank, even the subsidiaries, whether it's the broking and the securities firm, which has seen a significant jump in average daily volume trading through the mobile, our life insurance and our general insurance, have all focused on digital journeys and are acquiring a significant part of their business through digital. Thank you, Jeremy, and we can go forward.
I think we can now open up for Q&A.
Sure.
Sure. Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask questions, please press star and one. We have the first question from the line of Maruk Adajanya from Elara Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. So my first question is on today's package, that today's package of 3 trillion for the SMEs or the MSMEs is with outstanding of 25 crores.
Yep.
So do you lend to SMEs in that bucket, or your ticket size of SMEs would be a higher outstanding?
No. We lend all the way from the bottom of at much lower level and with below 25 crores. Therefore, if you look at our asset book, which has been presented by Jaimin, if you look at the different segments, if you look at within the corporate bank, there is a business banking segment, which is the SME segment. We lend there. Then we lend in the commercial vehicles and the construction equipment division, again to SMEs. Then there is the agricultural division. Then there is a consumer bank working capital division. There's a business loans division. So all these are in our MSME bucket. And many of them will be beneficiaries of this. Therefore, we see this as a very significant move. And therefore, we cover the whole spectrum of micro, small, medium, corporate and large corporates. The entire range in the business segment across our different segments.
Right. So, and is it at all possible to give some quantification? As in what proportion of the SME book would be?
So we have given that. If you look at the table, if you look at the corporate and business banking money, and what is the size of the SME within the business banking division, the SME division? Manian?
Hello. Yeah. About 21,000 crores out of that is business banking.
So out of corporate and business banking, which is at 84,855, SME division is 21,000. Then commercial vehicles and construction equipment would have some parts, which is SME, which is 19,000 crores is total division. Agricultural division, which is 21,000 crores, will have some part which will be an SME. And consumer bank working capital secured is almost entirely micro and small, the 19,000 crores which you're seeing there. Therefore, I would say it's a very reasonable percentage of our total book.
Got it. And most of a large proportion would be in the 25 crore and below outstanding, right?
Yes, we have a large portion of that. A large portion out of the SME piece. Say, for example, in corporate and business banking, the SME division is 21,000 crores.
Mm-hmm.
A reasonable portion of that would be below the 25 crore mark.
Okay.
Not all, but a reasonable portion.
Yeah.
Okay, that's very helpful. And my other question is on your outlook on loan growth, as in that you've been rightly cautious all this while because the macro has been very volatile. Now, given that most other banks or a lot of NBFCs and a few banks would have capital constraints, would you still be very cautious because of COVID, or would you like to take market share?
Okay, Maruk, divide into two parts. One is what I call as the BC period, which is before COVID period, okay? Before, at that stage, we were seeing an economic slowdown on the card. We were cautious on unsecured consumer. For example, if you look at on credit cards, personal loans and business loans, we had given our caution even in the earlier earnings calls, and which we repeated in the last call, and we actually walked the talk on that. For our conservatism on that was something which was pre-COVID. In, of course, in the post-COVID world, our view is the pain on the unsecured consumer in the balance sheets of banks would have a reasonable proportion. But having said that, how do we see in the post-COVID world? And in the post-COVID world, we are in the middle of three clear streams which we have to think about as we think about the risk-return matrix. Number one is the very short end, and I'm going across risk and duration. So at the very short end, the spreads are negative because any surplus liquidity, RBI is taking at 3.75%. So So that is a not a great carry, but it's a protection. Therefore, the move is you first move up the duration curve. As you move up the duration curve on risk-free, that is sovereign, you start getting some returns. Therefore, a three-year GSEC will give you a return of 470-480. Then the next decision you take is you want to move to quasi-sovereign. Okay. So if you go to quasi-sovereign for a three-year loan, you get 575-580. Then you move to high-end corporates. The high-end corporates today for a three-year loan are give or take around 7-odd%. So then you take a decision. What is the level of risk you want to take on the credit side? What is the level of risk you want to take on the duration side? And what is the trade-off between spread, duration, and risk as you take your calls across different segments? Of course, on the consumer segment, at this point of time, for the month of April, there was virtually no lending in the banking industry, new lending in the banking industry, very small amounts of lending which has happened in the banking industry. So we have to see how the consumer segment opens up as we go forward. But I just wanted to say that if the government has given a guarantee on the 3 lakh crores, we have the advantage of significant liquidity, and our cost of funds is very, very attractive. You are aware that we have dropped our savings deposit rate even in April going forward. And despite that, we are continuing to get a very high savings deposit and deposit flow into our bank. Therefore, with low cost of funds, high capital, where we feel credit risk makes sense and effectively we get the money back, that's the bottom line, we will lend. But we will lend when we have that comfort. Therefore, if there was no sovereign guarantee for some of the weaker MSMEs, we would be more cautious. But if the sovereign is stepping in, we will step up. That's the bottom line.
Got it. And just one last question. What would be your deposit outflow inflow in April, May? Like roughly, rough accretion to deposits?
You know, Maruk, normally every year, say for example, if you take a savings account or a current account, every year in April, it is normally a negative. But this year, particularly in savings, we are finding a surprising positive in terms of growth. And our savings growth in April has been extremely positive year on year as well. Okay?
Got it. Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manish Karwa from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Uday. Congratulations. Just on the savings deposit piece, would it be fair to assume that our savings cost this year would be about 80 to 90 basis points lower on an average compared to last year?
Manish, I'll have Jamin answer that. But let me just, you know, I remember in many earlier calls, you have always been pushing for us to be dropping rates.
Yes.
Now you've seen we have dropped rates. At the same time, we have kept the customer franchise. And if you look at our savings deposit positioning, we are now from a peak of 6%. We are now at 4.5% above 1 lakh and below 1 lakh, 3.75. Our major competitors are at 3.25 up to 50 lakhs and 3.75 above 50 lakhs. So even now, we have a competitive advantage despite a pretty significant reduction. And even at these rates, we are getting money in. Now, in terms of the benefit to cost of funds, I will ask Jamin what he would like to talk about. But yes, we have made two drops on 1st of April and 20th of April, which will flow through the current year. But over to Jamin.
Yes, Manish. Look, we have actually done the drop during the last year itself, and we've started seeing that benefit. We continue to be still giving a rate which is higher than most of the larger private sector banks. Even today, after the drops in April, we are offering 3.75 and 4.5. So that's a rate which is still higher. But yes, we have dropped the savings accounts rates, and which has resulted in our cost dropping down. We ended this quarter at 5.23, which was for the full year, it is a still higher number. But as we see the drop which we have done in the month of April, which is a sharper drop, we will see that benefit flowing into the current year. It will, of course, depend upon how much of the savings account flows with it. And what we've also seen is despite the drop in the rates in the previous periods, we did not see deposits moving out. So we've been able to maintain the deposits, and rate improvement should actually flow through in the current year.
And to add to Jaimin's point, Manish, and this is important, we consider the customer franchise as a key part of our decision. We are not going to give away our customer franchise and the savings deposit growth strategy which we have had, while obviously being conscious of the commercials of what we are doing. Therefore, it's a very careful balance we are doing between those and ensuring that the franchise of sustainable and low-cost deposits and the competitive advantage we have, we keep on driving home while reducing the cost of funds for the bank.
And since the funding costs are now, you know, at par with probably the best of the banks, I mean, that's the largest private sector bank now, does it also mean that we become a lot more aggressive on the best of the corporate lending, which up till now we have not done much? Is there a change of thought process on the lending side as well?
No. There is clearly a recognition that where opportunity is, we will lend. But we have to make sure that when we are driving the car, we don't get colored by the rear view mirror. We need to make sure that the best of corporates in the BC era, which is before COVID era, remain the best of the corporates in the AC era, that is after COVID era. If we believe that that is true, we will be more aggressive, and we are more aggressive in those cases. But no getting blindsided that in the past these corporates were good, therefore they will remain to be good, because the impact on different sectors is different. Therefore, a good corporate, for example, in say the movie industry, will it remain a good corporate going forward? Or theaters or airlines or hotels. So you have to look at a good corporate with looking in the front, and we have to be very careful we don't look at a good corporate on the rear view mirror.
Sure. And this does it also mean that for at least some time we work with reasonably higher margins, because not everything can get passed on, because risk perceptions have also gone up in the industry?
No, we will work on a sensible business model where we hold the customer, and we are in the business of ensuring higher pre-operating profits, because the fact of the matter is risk costs are going to be high. That's the nature of the COVID world, isn't it?
Yeah. And so okay, lastly,
price the higher risk cost.
And Jaimin, I just wanted one data point. This 26% is by value, right? Moratorium?
That's right.
And does it include, this is on console basis or only on the standalone bank?
Standalone bank. Actually, in the other entities, it's not large. This is standalone bank.
So the prime and investments would be a smaller number than 26%?
That's correct. That's right.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Having said that, I must add one other point, that this is moratorium given to customers by value as of 30th April. Customers are continuing to ask and take moratorium even in the month of May.
So you think, Uday, that this 26% can actually go up to somewhere around 30-35% by end of May?
I'll tell you on 1st of June.
No, and some of that we are finding because of extension of the lock-in period. You know, customers keep coming back. So let's say it gets extended next week again, you will find a fresh set of people coming in. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harshit Toshniwal from Premji Invest. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Had a few questions on the life insurance arm. So we saw a margin decline over FY19 to 20. And this is despite we being big amount of group business and even the non-par mix remaining constant. If you can throw some light on that particular segment.
Yeah, I'll give it over to Gaurang, but you must keep in mind that in the non-par segment, as yields drop, your margins come down. But I'll hand it over to Gaurang.
Correct. So I think there are factors which has contributed to reduction of margin, which is one is, as mentioned, by interest rate changes. So wherever interest rate comes down and you are holding a non-par book, then probably it hurts you in terms of your overall VNB margin. The second one is relating to the expense increase. You know, there is a higher agency proportion we had this year compared to what we had last year. So bank assurance came down by around 4%. So your channel mix also contributes. There is also some impact on the product mix. There is also an additional, you know, the cost which came because of the IRDA changes in terms of the surrender values and all that. So all four factors combined probably led to the margin drop. But still, let me tell you, at 28.8%, still it is the highest margin, you know.
Sure. In the industry. Yeah. Yes. True. One more follow up, sir. So you talked of return guarantee, but if you can share the mix within the non-par, and two, what is our hedging strategy in these those kind of products? Because shouldn't it be more viable that when we hedge this product, we can do that in a much larger proportion?
I think we have probably used all the possible options which are available in terms of, you know, partially paid bonds. We have done recurring deposits. We have taken FRA, which is a future rate agreement. And what we have done is we have invested or other non-par funds also for a long term. So if I look at currently in terms of present value terms, I think we would be completely hedged in terms of what liability we hold on this account.
Okay, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, everyone. I've got a bunch of questions. The first one is, just wanted to know the proportion of the portfolio where the standstill was offered and we had to make 10% provisioning. So what would that number be on the loan book?
Sorry. I mean, you want to go?
Yeah, sorry. Rahul, you're talking about what the standstill had offered and what would have otherwise turned into NPA as of 31st of March. As I mentioned earlier, that number is 660 crores.
Correct. But there would have been SMA 0 and SMA 1 accounts also where the standstill would have been offered.
If we go back to the fact that what I described is we have made a provision on all accounts which were overdue and where moratorium has been given and which were overdue on the 1st of March.
Overdue could be even one day.
One day. So even if he had a due on 28th of February and he did not pay on that day, he was an overdue on 29th of February.
So what would that amount be, Jamin?
So that's where we, as I said, 650 crores which we provided at account level represents about 10% of that number.
Okay, so the total amount, loan amount would have been 6,500 crores.
About that, yes.
Yeah, okay, got it. That's helpful. The second question is it possible to know the real estate exposure across the group? So standalone, you give it out, but I just wanted to know in other entities also. KMIL and Kotak Prime, if you have any out there.
Yeah, I think, Rahul, the point on KMIL, if you look at it, what is the total balance sheet size, Jamin, now?
KMIL would be about 5,800, 5,900 crores.
As that is total balance sheet size, total and something in KMP. So,
KMP would be about non-car would be about 7,000 crores.
Non-car.
So, if I look at it...
But all that is not real estate.
No, not all that is real. Yeah, there would be some... in KMP particularly...
There will be dealer loans there.
So Manian, what is the real estate exposure between the KML, KMP?
Yeah. So if you see on the in the bank standalone, we have shown you the number 6251. Total exposure across the group will be roughly about 50% more than this.
That's correct. Between the other two, it will be about 6,000.
No.
Sorry. It will be less than that, Jamin. The CRE part will be less than that.
The CRE part, 50%, when you say it's about 3,000 crores. The total would be 9,000 crores.
No, sorry. 1 minute. 6251 plus LRD 4457 is there. In the bank, it is effectively 10,000.
Oh, okay. Yeah, got it. And the group would be another couple of 5,000 crores.
And not more than that, less than that, yeah.
That includes LRB.
Yeah, understood. The other question was on the liquidity trends. I think congratulations to all of you to build such a mighty liability franchise. But clearly, I think the demand for loans is going to be low. So therefore, the LDR ratios, you know, would likely to come off, which is you know, I think in this environment a good thing. But where do you see that stabilize? Because at some stages, it will start, you know, costing us our margins as well.
I think it's a very fair question. That is why I said we are toggling between matched spread on the liability versus asset, duration call, and credit risk call. And we're toggling between these three almost every single day and figuring out how to position so that we minimize the negative or spread for marginal amounts versus taking a duration call or a credit call. So it's a juggling of the balls in the air, but it's a very, very focused exercise we are doing across on a continuing basis, on a day by day basis as we go forward. And we have an internal policy. We have an internal policy as we talk through where we have significantly changed the credit and the underwriting matrix. Where we are looking at accounts on incremental basis. It is taking a disproportionate amount of our time. But you know, the good news is in this post-COVID world, the productivity of operating from home for all of us has dramatically increased, and also the number of hours you're spending at work.
Yeah, but is there a band of margin that you would like to operate? You know, can you help us in that? You know, I'm sure you.
No, I think the answer to that is very simple. It is risk and return. We are not operating on an absolute margin level. We are operating on. We are ready to operate at lower spread if the risks are lower. We are obviously, if the risks are higher, we need to make sure first whether we should take those risks at all. And if we take those risks, are the risks worthwhile for the return?
It's Rahul, risk adjusted, you know, after tax return on equity.
Yeah, but as these are unusual times when we have to do hard work on modeling.
It doesn't make sense just to lend for the sake of lending.
No, I get that.
See, one of the most important things which is coming out is you get a great top line and great spread. Pre-operating profits look good, and then the provisioning line is taking it all away.
Yes, you know, so that's where, you know, it's a nice segue to my next question, and then perhaps the last one, on these loans, so where the moratorium has been taken, you know, when you compare to some of the other developed markets where this kind of facility has been allowed by the regulators, the amount of moratorium is much smaller than in India. And then, you know, one would wonder as to what would be the default rate, eventual default rate in these category of loans. So you've seen many cycles, you know, yourself, Deepak, Jamin. How are you thinking about it? Because one way to think about it is this COVID provision that you've taken works out about 1% and more on the moratorium loan. But the eventual loss rate could be higher than that in this cycle. So how should we think about it?
Yeah, I think Deepak will give you a more detailed answer. I just want to add one more variable in this. If the sovereign is going to come and guarantee some part of it, that takes some of the sting away for some part of it. However, want to give an answer on a more detailed one.
Sorry, if I can just interject Uday on that point. But what the sovereign has announced is it seems to be more on the incremental lending part. But not on
the base also, no? For example, if I get 100% protection on the incremental lending, it protects my base also better, no? Because that guy would have died otherwise without it.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
Okay, so it will grow out of the problem.
That is one. I would like to add one more thing, Manian, here. You know, we are finding a lot of cases. Actually, if you ask me, the overall working capital utilization of the SME sector actually has gone down in our book. Okay, overall utilization. So there are several cases where people have taken moratorium. Doesn't mean that their utilizations are at the brim, but they've still taken moratorium.
It is the same with the small working capital segment as well. Utilizations have actually come down. Can't see here.
All right. That was it. Thank you so much, and wish you good luck for the future. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amey Sate from Tata Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Yeah. Two questions from my side. One on the asset quality. So if you look at the, do you think the asset quality outcome for customers who have been given opt-in option vis-a-vis who have been given opt-out option can be significantly different? And second question is on employee cost. So apparently we have been hearing that we have implemented some salary cuts for 25 lakh and above. Just want to understand what are your thoughts? How are you seeing the situation? Because peer banks have not implemented such kind of cuts. So what are we looking at in terms of data points that we think that we need to take that kind of a step? Thank you.
Okay, I'll answer the second one. And then on the asset quality, I'll ask Gaurang to give his perspective. On salary cuts, I think our view is finally, we need to make sure that especially senior management, we are very institutional in our commitment to our firm. And if the firm is going through obviously a revenue impact coming out of COVID, it is an institutional framework that we will share it and take the pain alongside. Therefore, the leadership, which is the KLT team, has taken a 15% voluntary cut. Now, as far as going up to 25 lakhs is concerned, we have been driven by our conviction that our team is aligned to the purpose of this firm and will do what is in the interest of the firm on a sustainability basis. Our entire focus on strategy is build up a sustainable firm in the post-COVID world. And it is also a signal to people with salaries above 25 lakhs, not only for the salary side, but that this is the time when we must build our firm into a sustainable firm and avoid all areas which are areas of potential excesses which may be happening even in operating expenses. So it's more, of course, there is a real saving, but it's also a more a signaling thing that world is not the same. COVID has made a significant change to how the world of the future is. And it does not matter what others may do or not do. We are an institutionally aligned, culturally aligned firm. We will do what it takes to build a sustainable ship on a long term, on a medium term basis beyond the current challenges of COVID. So it is about sustainability. It's about signaling that the world is different. And third is that we believe that we will actually spend, as I mentioned, we will spend more on digital and technology than what we did last year. We are very committed to it because that is where we will put the money and we'll carry our teams with us and work towards a difference in the future. The post-COVID world is going to change how branches look. We are at 1,600 branches with fixed costs. There may be others who may be larger. We will review whether more branches make sense, does not make sense. Office spaces. So there is a massive internal plan which is going on that how will we change ourselves structurally in a post-COVID world to dramatically improve our sustainable efficiency without giving up where we can be better to customers or better on execution. And therefore the signal on salary cuts is more than anything else that the world is different. We have to be sustainable and signal that we are in ready for the change. Now, second point is over to Gaurang.
Can you repeat your question on asset quality?
Yeah, just a question is that if you have been given an opt-in for a customer, so the performance of a asset quality performance of a customer who has been given an option of opt-in vis-a-vis opt-out, will that be a significant difference?
No, but what do you mean by opt-in means
That if I want a moratorium, I will have to opt in for that moratorium. And opt out is that if you don't want moratorium, probably then you have to send a message or you have to inform the bank that I don't want moratorium. So if both the cases, do you think the asset quality outcome, because what we are hearing that some of the customers are taking moratorium simply because to conserve cash, they still have balances in their savings account. So that is what the feedback we are getting. So these customers might be completely standard and might come back and pay. So does the opt-in and opt-out mechanism actually make a difference from an asset quality perspective?
I think it's very qualitative, but my view normally is people who have probably gone for the benefit of opt-in, like proactively gone for it, the likelihood of those guys probably giving you a marginally higher probably delinquency. But it's very difficult to say how exactly it's likely to play out, because the entire thing actually is dependent upon how we come back in terms of near normalcy. Maybe just now we have just opened up, and with the economic activity or industrial activity just starting, maybe it may, if near normal you reach in say 3-4 months, perhaps that is likely to affect the delinquency more compared to how quickly you achieve normalcy. That will affect the delinquency more compared to whether somebody has preferred a moratorium just now, whether opt-in or opt-out.
Well, if I would answer it differently, I think it will depend a lot more than opt-in, opt-out, more on the sector first, the customer segment second, and the type of balance sheet and business which the customer runs. It really doesn't have to depend too much on opt-in or opt-out. But having said that, all of this is early days. Yeah, we have to go through it. We have to go through the next 1 or 2 months to really realize what happens with each segment.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I think that's it from my side.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to inform participants that in order that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to 2 per participant. We take the next question from the line of Prashant Podar from ADIA. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity. Uday, I've been hearing you in the media as well as in this call that the world post-COVID would be very different. If you could help us understand what is the framework you are using internally as to what are the key changes that are likely to happen post-COVID, and which are sustainable ones, sustained changes, and what does it mean for some of your key portfolios like commercial real estate, etc., or LRD within that? And the second question is regarding which are the segments where you see incrementally higher pocket of stress within your book, or which are the segments where you are seeing incrementally huge opportunities because of consolidation of the industry, financial sector, which is?
Yeah, I think, Prashant, very good question, but very wide. So for first is on the changes in the post-COVID world. Number one, I think we will need less office space, full stop. Okay? That is seems to be a reasonable outcome, where we have found that operating from home is not that difficult a thing. And in a lighter vein, I was just joking with my wife Pallavi and telling her that I just wonder whether I need to go full day office 5 or 6 days a week and attend office where a disproportionate amount of time gets wasted in relative trivia compared to kind of focus one is getting operating from home. And therefore, maybe the requirement to go to office comes down 30, 40, 50, 60%. Okay? I'm just looking at each of us. And we have all tested this in a new way. Therefore, certainly, I believe the demand for space has to get different from the past. Number two, I think we are bound to see significant increase in the digital journeys. Okay? So whether it is recoveries, whether it is sales, whether it is customer account opening, whether it is branches, whether it is the whole business about how we conduct our life, it is fundamentally changed. And this is like the tipping point. I think demonetization was the tipping point. For us, demonetization was a wake-up call. And as you know, it was 8th November, and that gave us an outcome of 8-1-1. Okay? We think the post-COVID world on the digital and the technology side is a turning point for future of most businesses, and certainly for us as we see the future. We ask the question, how many branches will we need in the future? How much office space will we need? How many call centers will we need? How do we get to be significantly higher levels of productivity, both on space and digital? post-COVID world, I also clearly believe spending on digital and technology will go up. I also believe brands will matter a lot more. Established people with certain brands must leverage that and invest in brand and customer franchise. The importance of, from a financial institution point of view, the importance of non-credit risk businesses and their share in the revenues of the firm as a focus area will significantly go up. Therefore, whether it is our advisory business, our wealth management business, our securities business, our asset management business, these are the businesses will have, which will get to a very, very significant focus and customer franchise. And they too will be subject to a lot more digital. I think these are some of the immediate changes I see. And the post-COVID world will also take a very important point. No firm is safe forever. It will make the credit decision-making process far more flexible than and alert than ever before. I cannot take for granted, for example, the way banks do renewals. We review it once a year. It is in the post-COVID world, we should be thinking about how we are going to review every stage and maybe much faster, because the change in business models and the future of institutions and companies will change at a much shorter period than before. What looked like a good business in the BC world may change in the AC world and may change again. Therefore, alertness, fleet-footedness, the stodgy, the institutions have to be careful that they do not remain stodgy as they have been. These are some of the changes I see.
Okay. I'll quickly just add one question. So that is, so which parts of the portfolio do you see incrementally higher stress, and where do you see more consolidation-led opportunities?
See, obviously, the question which you asked is, I think unsecured consumer is an area which I would worry, okay? Because he had become the high fashion model where everybody was lending. It was giving higher spread. And it was just the place to improve short-term ROEs because of the accounting treatment which unsecured consumer got. You did not recognize, you accounted for profits along the way of accrual without knowing that till the last, your profit is all in real world only in the last few installments. The unsecured consumer is the area which will be affected. Therefore, for example, if business is rationalized, you know, there was this perception that small business people are at higher risk than the salaried people. Companies will reduce jobs. Yeah. I mean, it is, in my view, both have the risks. I'm not saying the small businesses don't have the risk, but so also the salaried segment. And it does not matter whether you're a large company or a small company. Everyone will have to find a way of handling excess jobs if the world changes. And therefore, to say a salaried customer of a large company is safe, I don't think so.
Okay.
Similarly, obviously, sectors which look apparently under the heat are hospitality, malls and shopping. Are we going to see a lot more e-commerce going into the future? Yes. And look at the dramatic turnaround of the telecom sector. A sector which had 13 players saw the destruction of 10. And out of the balance 3, one was under pressure. And in a matter of 45 days in the post-COVID world, that is the backbone of our future. So that is a change post-COVID. And that will happen sector after sector. Do we need so many airlines?
Mm.
And we will have to deal with the question, how many banks should there be there? How many NBFCs should there be there? How many entities should be doing the same thing differently with different levels of governance, underwriting, etc.? And while public sector may be safe because it is ultimately owned by the government, which has the right to print money, the question is where is quality underwriting, execution, and a fast-changing business model requirement? How are you going to meet it even in the financial sector in the times to come? And those are the questions which need front-end answering and strategic focus.
Thank you very much, Uday. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anand Ladda from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead. Mr. Anand Ladda from HDFC Mutual Fund, you may go ahead with the question. There seems to be no response from the line of Mr. Anand Ladda. We move to the next question.
Hello? Yeah, he's called. He's on the line. Yes, Anand? Oh, he's gone again. Okay, move to the next
one. We move to the next question. The next question is from the line of Mr. Kunal Shah from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
So two questions. As you clearly said that there will be a lot of consolidation and we will be seeing whether there will be how many players could be there in the financial services space as well. Do you think this is a time or an opportunity to look at maybe the growing inorganically in any of the area, particularly on the lending side? Okay, so does it make sense? And I think just to tie it up, maybe the need for equity raise despite such a strong balance sheet, are we looking at any kind of inorganic opportunity that could come up in this challenging time?
Yeah, Kunal, I think the answer to that is if consolidation happens, as you know, consolidation will happen in the sector through two routes. One is mortality, second is combination. Okay, these are the two routes through which it happens. Now, if you look at the telecom sector, a lot of it happened through mortality and very little through combination. So we don't know how the sector plays out. The first job of ours is to ensure that we don't take anyone's mortality for or immortality for granted, in we included. Our first job is to navigate our ship and our boat through the turbulent sea. Therefore, the first job of any financial institution, which is a high, by very nature, high leverage, high fixed operating cost, is to navigate its boat. While you're doing that, you keep your eyes and ears open, particularly as you look, as the shore may look closer, to see what is possible. Because it's not just about being acquisitive for the sake of acquisition. It is about health of the industry. And I worry fundamentally in the financial sector, because if you look at the last 5, 6, 7 years, we have made barriers to entry, we have reduced. Therefore, we have had a flood of 8, 10, 12 small finance banks, nothing against any of them individually. So we had a flood of small finance banks coming. So barriers to entry have been relaxed. Similarly, we have seen a whole host of NBFCs come in the last 5 to 7 years. Again, welcome, no issues on that. But across all these new players, there are varying layers of governance, there are varying underwriting standards, there are very varying execution issues, and the quality of the liability franchise, which I think is extremely important in financial sector. And the at this stage, at the policy level, we do not have a clear strategy for exit of financial institutions. One of the important aspects of any free entry has to be thought through exit. Now, we were trying to get the financial resolution and deposit insurance bill approved, I think, about a year or two ago. It has not happened. Therefore, you have a reasonable entry availability for people. What is the exit policy which we in the financial sector have? Inevitably, that leads to a situation where you will have either mortality or some of them may be appropriate for consolidation in the sector.
Yeah, and secondly, particularly for Kotak, so obviously a very, very strong balance sheet with such a capital adequacy deposit franchise. But maybe in terms of the salary cuts, you clearly highlighted that looking at a long-term sustainability and stability. So I think obviously coming from a low growth, very, very strong underwriting standards, credit filters, is there any pocket which is worrying us, or is it something that we see that this is going to be much more prolonged and that's why this kind of decision is needed at such a stage?
You know, Kunal, the fact of the matter is worry is a way of life, okay? So you've got to keep on worrying. At the same time, you must also have a nose for opportunity. So you must have worry, opportunity. So you really are toggling between these different things, but you got to constantly do it, because the challenge with opportunity also, it never announces that it has come. It's only after it's gone that you know the opportunity has gone. So you need to keep both in your mind. And worry is, I wake up in the morning worrying about something else. By night, it is worrying about something else. And then wake up next morning and find something else as an opportunity. And I think my entire team who's on this call, we debate endlessly. We start our days having a small group chatting every single day and saying every day is a new day.
Okay. And lastly, in terms of the moratorium, I don't know if you have shared it, but can you just highlight in terms of this breakup between the retail, SME and the corporate at a broad level?
Jaimin?
Look, we not given the overall numbers, but broadly, you could suffice to say that the percentage of people opting, and I'm talking value terms, opting at the retail level would be significantly higher than at SME levels. And then you take, let's say, for example, the microfinance guys, almost everybody, because you did not collect, got into moratorium. Then you take the next set of levels would be different. But as you go to the upper end corporates, the numbers keep tapering down. They're smaller in terms of number of customers, but pretty large in value. That segment would be the smallest in terms of opting for moratorium at that stage.
No, but since we are given it in terms of value, so maybe when we look at 26% value of loans being under moratorium, would there be too much of a difference? Customers, I clearly understand that retail would be much on the higher side, but in value terms, how are we seeing it between retail, SME and corporate?
Yeah, so value-wise, as I said, the wholesale number, the larger corporates would be a small number compared to what is their weight in the overall advances segment.
Kunal, the percentage in value terms of retail is higher than percentage in value terms of wholesale.
Of course. Okay. Okay. Got it. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd request participants to please limit their questions to one per participant. The next question is from the line of Gaurav Kochar from Mira Asset. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening everyone and thanks for taking my question. What is the average SA balance of 811 customers versus non-811 customers? If you can give some color on that.
Jaimin?
Sorry, I missed the things. What we are talking about is in the last year, we had opened a total of about 44 lakh customers. In the lockdown, Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the lockdown, we earlier felt like, you know, how would you reach out to customer, whatever. But in the lockdown, we've continued to get these customers on board. And if I look at the average for May in the current month, we're actually opening on this month, the average is as good as what I had the average for the previous year.
I meant the average balances in their accounts.
Balance in the accounts, in the 811 accounts will still be small.
But sure.
You then migrate them to the full KYC account and make him a regular customer. So that's a journey.
Sure. But what is the difference? I mean, I'm sure the 811 would be significantly lower, but the non-811 customers, what would be the average savings account balance there?
Non-811 customers would be higher. It would be close to 40,000-50,000 rupees. I didn't have the exact number here.
All right. On SA, clearly last 2-3 years, I mean, our SA has grown in place of the term deposits, which the other banks, where the other banks have grown faster. But this was primarily because, you know, our SA rate was about 200 bps higher than the largest private bank, perhaps. Now that gap has narrowed down to, say, 75 bps. Do you see that as a risk, you know, and now probably the bank will focus more on term deposits going ahead?
Shanti, you want to give a sense on SA year on year April without getting into specifics? How is SA year on year April versus last April growth?
Yeah, I will do that. So to answer the question, last year we had dropped rates and we saw no change in the acquisition or deepening pattern of our customer base on savings accounts. This April, as Uday had mentioned, we have dropped rates further. And in fact, this has perhaps been one of the best Aprils that we have seen typically post-March, you see a different April, but we have seen significant franchise improvement in our savings account for the month of April as compared to last April, and it is significant.
Right.
So this is despite drop in rates.
Sure.
So, two things.
Just asking from a strategy point of view.
Go ahead. Question.
Just from a strategy point of view, will there be focus on term deposits, say for a longer term, in the next couple of years, or will continue with the same strategy of, you know, SA acquisition in place of term deposits?
No, we are continuing to take term deposits, but the focus on term deposits is smaller ticket. That means deposits up to 1 crore is our preferred term deposit strategy.
Right.
And our focus on savings accounts continue, both on number of customers, growing the customer franchise in terms of deepening product and of balances. There has just been no stoppage in the strategy.
All right. Sure. And if I can squeeze in one more question. If I look at the Basel III data that we disclose, roughly 100% and above risk weight comprises of around 58% of the overall assets. Now, that number does not tie up with the loan book mix. Am I missing something, or what forms a large part of that 100% and more than 100% risk weights? Yeah, if you can give some color on that.
Jaimin? Or you want to get back? Jaimin?
Hello?
I'm on that. The Basel III disclosure, sorry, no, I'll get back, but Basel III disclosure is just to say they are all on exposure levels. They take into account non-fund based investments, all of that.
I'm talking about only the funded exposures.
Yep. So I'll get back to you with the exact category.
Sure.
And outstanding business. Not
exposure. Yes.
Yeah, that's exposure, not outstanding.
All right. The funded exposure.
That's it.
Sure.
We can take it not outstanding loans.
All right.
You may have a limit on a client which is 100 and he may utilize 60. So then the loan is 60, the exposure will show as 100.
All right. So we can take it offline. That's fine. And lastly, the slippage number that you gave would have increased by 6.6 billion in March, which means that as on 31st March, if not for Morat, 6.6 billion would have slipped. Is that a right assumption?
That's correct. 660 crores would have slipped. That's correct.
But this ideally should have then been reflected in the SMA 2 book, because as on 1st March, if these are 60 plus...
Agreed. I'll answer. Broadly, there are two categories. SMA 2 reflects only balances of accounts which are 5 crore plus. The 660 crores would have accounts which are not NP in the classic definition of having crossed 90 days, but they get into that category because they've not, let's say, serviced the interest debited in the cash credit account for a 3-month period. So they're not 90 day overdue, but they are what is technically called out of order. They would have got into NPA, but they're not SMA 2 still.
All right. Got it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to participants to please limit your questions to one per participant. The next question is from the line of Anand Landa from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Sir, thanks for giving a lot of explanation. I have a couple of questions. Sir, what's your view on the consumption spend going to happen? What's your view on credit card and personal loan? How do you see growth in these two segments? And sir, do you still believe the credit card has more risk than a personal loan or vis-a-vis? First question that. Second, sir, when do you think the economy will come back to normalcy? Be it September, be it December, or maybe take a longer time? And lastly, sir, what's your view on the CV, CEQ, construction equipment and auto portfolio? Do you think the risk on the CV and CEQ is higher than the personal loan book, or is it similar to SME? And if you can share your view on the same.
Right. Okay, based on what we have seen, I think unsecured consumer loans and credit cards, we see some pain coming clearly in that segment. In the secured segment, we are seeing commercial vehicles continue to see high.
Second, sir, when do you think the economy will come back to normalcy?
be September, be December, or maybe take a longer time? And lastly, sir, what's your view on the CV, CEQ, construction equipment and auto portfolio? Do you think the risk on the CV and CEQ is higher than the personal loan book, or is it similar to SME? Or, and if you can share your view on the same.
Right. Okay, based on what we have seen, I think unsecured consumer loans and credit cards, we see some pain coming clearly in that segment. In the secured segment, we are seeing commercial vehicles continue to see high pain. Therefore, the three, obviously, you can't compare a secured versus unsecured. I would say the areas which we are watching very closely are unsecured consumer loans and credit cards, microfinance loans, and commercial vehicles in particular. These three segments are the reasonable soft belly of the lending business today.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anirvan Sarkar from Principal Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you, sir, for the opportunity. A few data keeping questions. First, if you could provide the split of provisions for loans into provisions for NPAs and standard asset provisions for the full year.
Jamie?
Yeah, okay. Just you have to move.
Copy. Yeah.
For what would go for the full year, my specific provisions would be about 1400 crores.
Okay.
And all standard provisions, including COVID and all, would be 720 crores.
Okay, all right. And sir, my second question is on the cash in the balance sheet. So I see that there is a sudden spike in the amount of cash in the balance sheet, and my calculated margins actually are lower than your last quarters, but I see that your reported margins have increased. And so that's a bit counterintuitive if I see that how much the amount of cash has increased. So is it like a lot of cash came in towards the end of the quarter, or how should we look at this? Is that why your average balance is lower than what I get from
What you're looking at is end of period. The NIMs are calculated on a daily average basis. So on the daily average, what is my earning investment and what is whatever I earned against that?
Correct, correct. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chandan Yadav from AU Small Finance. Please go ahead. Chandan Yadav from AU Small Finance, you may go ahead with the question. There seems to be no response on the line of Chandan Yadav. We move to the next question. The next question is from the line of Prakash Kapadia from Anived Portfolio Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my question. I had, you know, two questions. So on the savings account rate cut, this would what lead to a 700-800 crore kind of benefit on the P&L this year? And secondly, you know, on home loan and LAP, that has been a growing segment. So is it due to lower cost of funds? Which are the cities we are seeing? Are we building the LAP book? What is the mix, if you could give some sense?
Shanti.
Yeah, I will talk about the home loan and the LAP book.
Sure.
Number of savings, I leave that to Jamin Das. So our strategy last year has been to build the home loan business actually quite aggressively over the course of the year. We incrementally have focused around our own branches and our own customers. So we have followed the strategy of our liability customers on the home loan segment and really tried to build largely in the main cities, which is Mumbai, Delhi, Bangalore, Ahmedabad, Pune, but also the smaller locations where we are. So that's been our strategy. Our loan against property, it is more in the larger cities, and the home loan business has been more aggressive than the LAP business in terms of, you know, the growth. historically LAP has grown more. And roughly you can say in terms of the breakup between the two, it is almost equal.
Even today it is equal.
Yeah, almost. Home loan may be slightly marginally higher. Home loan may be higher. Yeah.
Okay. Chairman, you want to give some color on the savings rate cut?
That the savings changes which we have done over a period of time, we started doing it last year and we've continued cuts in the current year. They will bring in benefits. Some of them have been seen in the last year, including the last quarter. And some of it will flow because there have been further cuts which have happened in the month of April. So, yes, we'll get some benefits, but that's where the cost of funds have come down sharper and which has resulted into, you know, the NIMs going up and whatnot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Sharma from Enam Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just on the asset quality side, given that we will not get a color on the asset quality of the moratorium accounts, any guidance in terms of credit cost for FY21? And if I assume that non-COVID, we were closer to 70 bps in terms of loan loss provisioning, the number for FY21 could be similar, or you see higher risk? But I think we need to wait for the clarity on the moratorium account behavior. And second would be the question on, in terms of your consumer book, could you give some color as to how much is salaried and how much is self-employed? And I would assume so we would have given higher loan to the existing customers. Any sort of a color on that would be helpful, sir. That would be all.
Yeah, on the first, on credit costs, when I look at the before COVID era, which is before 31st March, one of the things which we have done, as you know, which I mentioned, is whatever is our standard provisioning plus COVID provisioning versus our net NPA, we are in excess on those provisionings over and above our net NPA number. Therefore, we start 2021 with a provisioning number which has taken care of the balance sheet as of 31st March more than adequately. So now you come to the new year, the AC era, as we call it, or after Corona or after COVID era. Now on that, the issue is at this stage, we are talking about the World Bank talking about India's GDP growth at 1.9. Nomura talking about India's GDP growth as minus 5. We are all speculating up in thin air. Therefore, if I take a 100 lakh crore banking sector loan book, it is impossible for us to say whether the loan losses will be 2% for the industry or 10% for the industry. Okay? And it also depends on how much is the state and the sovereign coming in to plug the hole.
Yeah.
Therefore, the way I would look at it is take it as it comes. And of course, you must be conservative. Therefore, make your provisions to the extent possible, which fortify you and make you safe. But speculating on how much the hit will be, of course, we have internal working numbers, what we think could happen, base case, sector, everything. But the position changes almost every day. What looks bad today looks good tomorrow. What looks good today is looking bad tomorrow. And it's changing at a very fast pace. Therefore, whether it is us as a in the banking business or you in the asset management business or in any other, as or some of you as analysts, to try and predict what that cost will be, it's still early days. We will get a better sense of this, in my view, by July, August. And therefore, I don't want to speculate on that at this stage what it will be. But all that I can say, at this stage, it is reasonable to assume that the banking sector credit costs will certainly be higher than what they were.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vikram Kotak from Lansdowne India Equity Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. My question is that we've seen the quality of borrowers deteriorating over the last 5 years, whether you see individual borrowers or sector-wise. And post-COVID, as you rightly mentioned, that the further many sectors will be non-lendable. So don't you think that this is going to lead to a portfolio concentration risk, whether it's a sector-wise or group-wise or company-wise?
And how do you deal with that? Like, whatever, you give a right example of telecom sector, which is on deathbed to 6 months back. And today we are in the positive side. So do you really see this is going to be a huge challenge for banking industry to have portfolio concentration risk? And how do you deal with this?
No, I think, Vikram, it's a very good question. If the industry consolidates, the lending business takes more concentration risk. That's the inevitable outcome. But we'll have to see how it plays. Against that, I think the banking industry will get more responsible on kind of covenants it must have for its lending. One of the problems in Indian banking and underwriting has been very poor covenants. Okay?
Right.
And that will also change. As also, if you get consolidated industry, the larger players, we will assume we will have better fiduciary responsibility of auditors. We will have hopefully better fiduciary responsibility of rating agencies. And it's, you need to make sure for a properly functioning financial system, which is both the loan market and the bond market at the same time, you need significantly higher levels of commitment, diligence, and accountability by every player in the sector. And I do believe consolidation will get us better on that path as well.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gurpreet Arora from Aviva India. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Three quick questions. In your sense, do you think there is a case for the loan moratorium extension? And if yes, then what is our assessment of our numbers that way? Second is, I mean, if you could spell a little bit on the recovery infrastructure that the bank has and is planning to scale or, develop. And when you talk about cost in terms of more technology and less of others, if you can quantify if the 18% OPEX growth rate is what is sustainable, or we are looking at a lower number than that. And third and last question is, if you can quantify what's the excess liquidity in the balance sheet, what is the quarterly average LCR ratio, and till what time do you think we will need to keep excess liquidity in the balance sheet? Thank you.
Deepak, do you want to go for this? Deepak, you're on it? You're on the line?
Yeah. I guess difficult to say whether the moratorium will get extended or not. But, you know, once the package from the government is there guaranteeing a lot of this stuff, probably the moratorium may not necessarily be required for any longer. So, I guess one hope doesn't really, even if it does, it doesn't extend for too long. But it probably may not be required because of the financial package really now. I didn't get the second part of your question.
Second, with respect to the OPEX, I mean, we have spoken about increasing OPEX towards more towards technology and less towards others. So in terms of recovery infrastructure, I mean, how are we placed, if you can highlight a few qualitative and quantitative aspects. The OPEX growth run rate of 18%, are we targeting a lower number than this overall?
Well, like Uday mentioned some time back, we have to look at our overall cost structure in the post-COVID environment. Yeah, what costs are required, what costs are not required, what costs are useful, what costs can be cut down. All of this will go through productivity measures as we come out of the lockdown. So there will be some savings. Yeah, there will be a lot more work from home, office space savings. All of that will be travel savings. All of those will be there. When it comes to recovery infrastructure is different for retail and for SME and corporate. I think going forward, one has to invest a lot more in the retail infrastructure, because what happens really is at such times, you know, those numbers actually shoot up in a step fashion. So you require a lot more of infrastructure. And infrastructure is not just people, it's people plus technology required to chase customers and do your collection. So those costs do go up, and some of that is reflected even in this quarter's number, which you see.
So overall, are we...
You use technology to do some of this very smartly. Yeah, you don't have to chase all customers. Yeah, you know, technology and analytics provides you with the
you know, inputs to chase customers who you think will probably pay you faster and more quicker, really. So some of those also you put in place.
So overall, are we targeting an OPEX growth rate of 18% or a lower number?
Obviously, it will be lower. And keep in mind, our OPEX cost last year on a year-on-year basis is also higher because of 811 costs. If you look at the previous year, 811 costs, Aadhaar had a Supreme Court judgment. The second half of the previous year, there was no Aadhaar-based 811 account opening, which has come back in the current year. So those costs are front-end acquisition costs we are taking through P&L. And they are more sort of acquisition costs for future growth. And obviously, that increases the operating ratio, operating cost ratio.
Thank you very much. We'll take that as the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Uday Kotak for closing comments.
Thank you very much. I think this has been a long call. We are now nearly, 1 hour, 40 minutes into the call. I would just like to end by saying that in this new world, we move forward with what I would call as conservative optimism to build a sustainable and resilient firm as we go forward. Would like to be fleet-footed and flexible and be able to look at the world from a different lens than what we have looked at in the past. And we do believe that for all the challenges which we are facing, there will be also opportunity for growth across the financial sector as we go forward. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Kotak Mahindra Bank, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect the lines.